Escuelas oficiales de idiomas de Andalucía. Comprensión oral. Inglés. Nivel intermedio B2. Tarea 1. Dispone de 2 minutos para leer las instrucciones y el contenido de la tarea.
Zero. The actual song, The Rose, that was taken from that album became a bit of an anthem, really, for me and my friends. Over the years, we have been known to sing this song at various friends' weddings, probably even a couple of funerals of parents and things, christenings. We don't really need an excuse. We will always sing The Rose, and I pity the people that have to listen to it, because we try to do these harmonies and it must sound atrocious, but it's very much our anthem.
One.
Every house I went round to when I was growing up, I heard this particular track, and it's only when I have grown up and I listen to it now, what it means to me is there was a lot of stuff, my parents, my uncles, aunties, everybody was going through that I didn't know at the time. They might have been dealing with prejudice. They might have been dealing with not being respected in some way, shape or form, but they would put this song on and it just, you would see people sway. You would see people dance. You see people hold each other's hands. And the song is...
Two.
My first track is Mersey Paradise and it's by the Storm Roses. And the Storm Roses were the first band I had a real obsession with, and they were probably the 4 most beautiful men I'd ever seen in my life, the coolest men, but they had attitude and they really spoke to my teenage self. And this is quite a dark track, but I spent a lot of time.
3.
It's a song of darkness but with hope. And it's also a song against the striving for perfection. He tells us there is a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in.
Four.
I've chosen Gene Wilder, Pure Imagination, because I spent a lot of time in my youth watching musicals and theatre, and it really inspires me, this particular piece of music, and I listen to it a lot when I'm sort of at the beginning of a creative process. It has a lot of curiosity and there's something quite creepy about it, and those two things in combination are like a big hit for me.
Five.
The song is Asku Gezu Ubuchi. And I think it's just, we just have to linger on the fact it is from Ethiopia, 1969 to 1974. And honestly, if we all ask ourselves what preconceptions and stereotypes we have of Ethiopia, I don't think it's that. So I love it for the music primarily, but I also love the story. I love where it's come from, and I love what it says about the place and the deep, deep culture that exists there that challenges our sometimes simplistic preconceptions.
6.
Stairway to Heaven is one of those songs that just grows from some very simple, folky melody. And I love that. I love the idea that something comes out of something and you get one flavour and then you peel away something else and it gets deeper and deeper. That's what I love about all music, that gives you one statement and then later on it changes into something else and keeps changing like a chrysalis. And it's also beautiful.
Dispone ahora de un minuto para comprobar sus respuestas. Escuche de nuevo la grabación.
Zero.
The actual song, The Rose, that was taken from the album, became a bit of an anthem, really, for me and my friends. Over the years, we have been known to sing this song at various friends' weddings, probably even a couple of funerals of parents and things, christenings. We don't really need an excuse. We will always sing The Rose, and I pity the people that have to listen to it, because we try to do these harmonies and it must sound atrocious, but yeah, it's very much our anthem.
One.
Every house I went round to when I was growing up, I heard this particular track, and it's only when I have grown up and I listen to it now, what it means to me is there was a lot of stuff my parents, my uncles, aunties, everybody was going through that I didn't know at the time. They might have been dealing with prejudice. They might have been dealing with not being respected in some way, shape or form. But they would put this song on and it just, you would see people sway. You would see people dance. You see people hold each other's hands. And the song is...
Two.
My first track is Mersey Paradise and it's by the Storm Roses. And the Storm Roses were the first band I had a real obsession with. And they were probably the four most beautiful men I'd ever seen in my life, the coolest men, but they had attitude. And they really spoke to my teenage self. And this is quite a dark track, but I spent a lot of time.
Three.
It's a song of darkness, but with hope. And it's also a song against the striving for perfection. He tells us there is a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in.
Four.
I've chosen Gene Wilder, Pure Imagination, because I spent a lot of time in my youth watching musicals and theatre, and it really inspires me, this particular piece of music, and I listen to it a lot when I'm sort of at the beginning of a creative process. It has a lot of curiosity and there's something quite creepy about it, and those two things in combination are like a big hit for me.
Five.
And the The song is Asku Gezu Ubuchi. And I think it's just we just have to linger on the fact it is from Ethiopia, 1969 to 1974. And honestly, if we all ask ourselves what preconceptions and stereotypes we have of Ethiopia, I don't think it's that. So I love it for the music primarily, but I also love the story. I love where it's come from and I love what it says about the place and the deep, deep culture that exists there that challenges our sometimes simplistic preconceptions.
6.
Stairway to Heaven is one of those songs that just grows from some very simple, folky melody. And I love that. I love the idea that something comes out of something and you get one flavour and then you peel away something else and it gets deeper and deeper. That's what I love about all music, that gives you one statement and then later on it changes into something else and keeps changing like a chrysalis. And it's also beautiful.
Dispone ahora de un minuto para comprobar sus respuestas. Este es el final de la tarea 1. Tarea 2. Dispone de 2 minutos para leer las instrucciones y el contenido de la tarea.
Next to the South Korean capital, Seoul, which has seen more flooding this week. Several people drowned in an underground car park, highlighting once again the threat posed to hundreds of thousands of people who also live below ground in the city. The story of a low-income South Korean family living in a basement apartment was captured in the Oscar-winning film Parasite. In one memorable scene, the heavens open and floodwater fills the family home. Last month, in a cruel example of life imitating art, Seoul experienced its heaviest flooding in 100 years. Water rushed into homes, trapping residents inside. 4 people were killed. The city government has since promised to get rid of the basement apartments and create more social housing. But as Jean McKenzie has been finding out, this offers little comfort to those who live there.
My favourite feature of Seoul is the mountains that surround it from every angle. They add a beautiful tranquility to this sprawling, frenetic city. From their summits, I'm constantly overawed by the sea of never-ending skyscrapers dotted down below. They showcase the city's wealth, as well as the sheer number of people who live here. This is the side of Seoul that's visible, the one projected around the world in K-dramas and films. What's imperceptible is the vast underground network of apartments known as Pangea, where 1 in 20 residents live. The word Pangea literally translates to half underground. But as I climb down under the city's streets for the first time, I realise the translation is misleading. Apart from some tiny windows that peek above the pavement to let in a slither of light, the apartments are entirely underground. They were, after all, built back in the 1970s as places to shelter from North Korean bombs. I've come with Choi Jie and her family to revisit their home that was flooded last month. Shaken, she points at a line of damp just shy of the ceiling, marking how high the water came up. Their home was submerged in minutes. In the panic, no one can remember how they got out. Jie's family has never had much. But 12 years ago, her husband, a boiler technician, started to earn too much to qualify for social housing, and they were forced to move. This Pangea was all they could afford. But with a separate living room and a bedroom for her sons, Jie thought they'd be happy. And for a while, they were, until they first got flooded. This is the second time they've survived. Jie breaks down. "I'm just so sorry to have put them through this twice." Her son, Jongtae, now in his 20s, strokes her head as she sobs. "I wish she wouldn't feel bad," he tells me. "Honestly, I have more good memories in this place than bad. It doesn't matter what floor we live on." I can tell he means it, but it matters to Jie. She knows she only has a few years left before her sons leave home, and she's desperate for them to be able to see the sky and breathe good air. Successive governments have failed to build adequate flood defences while allowing the housing market to spin out of control. Apartment prices in Seoul have doubled in the past 5 years. "It feels like no matter how hard we work," Jie says, "we're stuck here. But we'll work harder now."
Dispone ahora de 1 minuto para comprobar sus respuestas. Escuche de nuevo la grabación.
Next to the South Korean capital, Seoul, which has seen more flooding this week. Several people drowned in an underground car park, highlighting once again the threat posed to hundreds of thousands of people who also live below ground in the city. The story of a low-income South Korean family living in a basement apartment was captured in the Oscar-winning film Parasite. In one memorable scene, the heavens open and floodwater fills the family home. Last month, in a cruel example of life imitating art, Seoul experienced its heaviest flooding in 100 years. Water rushed into homes, trapping residents inside. 4 people were killed. The city government has since promised to get rid of the basement apartments and create more social housing. But as Jean McKenzie has been finding out, this offers little comfort to those who live there.
My favourite feature of Seoul is the mountains that surround it from every angle. They add a beautiful tranquility to this sprawling, frenetic city. From their summits, I'm constantly overawed by the sea of never-ending skyscrapers dotted down below. They showcase the city's wealth, as well as the sheer number of people who live here. This is the side of Seoul that's visible, the one projected around the world in K-dramas and films. What's imperceptible is the vast underground network of apartments, known as Pangea, where 1 in 20 residents live. The word Pangea literally translates to half underground. But as I climb down under the city's streets for the first time, I realise the translation is misleading. Apart from some tiny windows that peek above the pavement to let in a slither of light, the apartments are entirely underground. They were, after all, built back in the 1970s as places to shelter from North Korean bombs. I've come with Choi Jie and her family to revisit their home that was flooded last month. Shaken, she points at a line of damp just shy of the ceiling, marking how high the water came up. Their home was submerged in minutes. In the panic, no one can remember how they got out. Jie's family has never had much. But 12 years ago, her husband, a boiler technician, started to earn too much to qualify for social housing, and they were forced to move. This Pangea was all they could afford. But with a separate living room and a bedroom for her sons, Jie thought they'd be happy. And for a while, they were, until they first got flooded. This is the second time they've survived. Jie breaks down. "I'm just so sorry to have put them through this twice." Her son, Jongtae, now in his 20s, strokes her head as she sobs. "I wish she wouldn't feel bad," he tells me. "Honestly, I have more good memories in this place than bad. It doesn't matter what floor we live on." I can tell he means it, but it matters to Jie. She knows she only has a few years left before her sons leave home, and she's desperate for them to be able to see the sky and breathe good air. Successive governments have failed to build adequate flood defences while allowing the housing market to spin out of control. Apartment prices in Seoul have doubled in the past 5 years. "It feels like no matter how hard we work," Jie says, "we're stuck here. But we'll work harder now."
Dispone ahora de 1 minuto para comprobar sus respuestas. Este es el final de la tarea 2. Tarea 3. Dispone de 2 minutos para leer las instrucciones y el contenido de la tarea.
Imagine you're a young person exploring the wilderness for the first time. A massive bag on your back and a massive challenge ahead. Your boots are perpetually wet, but you feel amazing. Stronger, more confident, more independent. At British Exploring Society, we call this finding your fire. I was 17 when I first found my fire. Being keen on photography and the outdoors, I signed up for one of the British Exploring Society's adventures in Iceland. Camping on an ice-capped mountain was incredible, even though we were all cold and a group of 10 strangers to start off with. We soon learned how to work and live together and to keep safe. Rations were limited, and I've never left a scrap of food on my plate since. As our resilience grew, so did our respect for each other and the special place we were in. I still love the wilderness and have never forgotten what I learned. British Exploring Society's focus now is giving that opportunity to young people in disadvantaged communities and those facing many challenges, like 18-year-old Catherine, a student and carer for her autistic sister, who also has diabetes. Catherine often feels low and experiences anxiety and depression, but she is always there to help others. Joining British Exploring Society in the Scottish Highlands gave her a break from being a carer to try something new and completely for herself. After 3 weeks of learning to live in the wilderness and being close to nature, she says she found a new lease of life and made lifelong friends. She also has a newfound confidence and can manage her anxiety better. Catherine is now converting her love of wildlife into qualifications for work in animal management. Her expedition is helping shape her life, as my Icelandic experience has mine. Please help hundreds of young people find their fire. £65 could pay for a pair of proper boots and socks to get up that first hill. Every donation up to £5,000 will be doubled thanks to a match funding opportunity. You can give now. Just search online for BBC Radio 4 Appeal or call 0800 404 8144. Or you can write a cheque to British Exploring Society and send it to Free Post BBC Radio 4 Appeal. And importantly, please mark the back of your envelope, British Exploring Society. Thank you.
My 14-year-old daughter.
Dispone ahora de un minuto para comprobar sus respuestas. Escuche de nuevo la grabación.
Imagine you're a young person exploring the wilderness for the first time. A massive bag on your back and a massive challenge ahead. Your boots are perpetually wet, but you feel amazing. Stronger, more confident, more independent. At British Exploring Society, we call this finding your fire. I was 17 when I first found my fire. Being keen on photography and the outdoors, I signed up for one of the British Exploring Society's adventures in Iceland. Camping on an ice-capped mountain was incredible, even though we were all cold and a group of 10 strangers to start off with. We soon learned how to work and live together and to keep safe. Rations were limited, and I've never left a scrap of food on my plate since. As our resilience grew, so did our respect for each other and the special place we were in. I still love the wilderness and have never forgotten what I learned. British Exploring Society's focus now is giving that opportunity to young people in disadvantaged communities and those facing many challenges, like 18-year-old Catherine, a student and carer for her autistic sister, who also has diabetes. Catherine often feels low and experiences anxiety and depression, but she is always there to help others. Joining British Exploring Society in the Scottish Highlands gave her a break from being a carer to try something new and completely for herself. After 3 weeks of learning to live in the wilderness and being close to nature, she says she found a new lease of life and made lifelong friends. She also has a newfound confidence and can manage her anxiety better. Catherine is now converting her love of wildlife into qualifications for work in animal management. Her expedition is helping shape her life, as my Icelandic experience has mine. Please help hundreds of young people find their fire. £65 could pay for a pair of proper boots and socks to get up that first hill. Every donation up to £5,000 will be doubled thanks to a match funding opportunity. You can give now. Just search online for BBC Radio 4 Appeal or call 0800 404 8144. Or you can write a cheque to British Exploring Society and send it to Free Post BBC Radio 4 Appeal. And importantly, please mark the back of your envelope, British Exploring Society. Thank you.
My 14-year-old daughter.
Dispone ahora de un minuto para comprobar sus respuestas. Este es el final de la tarea 3. Aquí acaba la prueba de comprensión oral. Por favor, siga las instrucciones del profesorado en su aula.